Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is October 28th. We are in Parshas Bishalach. We went through Pasuk Yedah through 14. That's how far we got.
Yeah.
But we're up to 15. However, we had to go back for. We said there are a few points that we left hanging last time, which I'd like to cover before we move on. The Torah tells us the Jews have left Egypt. They were making great progress, and then Hashem tells Moshe, "Go back, because I want to trap Paro. I want to make him think the Jews are wandering and lost, and that I want him to chase after the Jewish people so that I can destroy him, and my name will be sanctified through the destruction of Paro and his people and his army." So Moshe knows that the strategy is to make the Jews look like they're vulnerable so that Paro will come after them. Moshe knows that. He doesn't know that there's going to be a splitting of the sea. That he doesn't know. He just knows that there's going to be some salvation that's going to happen in a miraculous way in order to destroy Paro and his army in a public, spectacular way that will make God's name sanctified. Yes.
Did they understand that they were backtracking?
They did. And it says they followed Moshe, and they did not say, "How can we do this? How can we go back?" That is a feather in our cap that we did not question. We went back with Moshe. The Torah then tells us that Paro fell for the trap. He saw that the Jews were floundering, and he got word that they were lost in the desert, and he convinced his people to chase after the Jewish people, and they do. And they catch up to the Jews with the Jews have their backs to the Red Sea, and the Egyptians are now, they have them. They think they have them anyway. So, Pasuk Yod, on page 370, Pasuk Yod, verse 10, says, Ufaro hikriv, and Paro literally means, it's taken to mean he came close, he approached. And the Jews lifted their eyes, and behold, Mitzrayim was chasing after them, and they got very scared, and the Jews called out to Hashem. Now, we mentioned last time that there were different types of Jews. Some Jews called out to Hashem. That's what we just read. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, then they said to Moshe, "Are there not enough graves in Egypt that you took us to die in the wilderness? Why did you take us out of Egypt? Isn't this what we told you when we were still in Egypt? Leave us alone and let us serve the Egyptians. It's better that we serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." So we pointed out last time that there were different factions of Jews. Some Jews called out to Hashem, but others, led by the Erev Rav, led by those Egyptians who joined the Jewish people on the way out of Egypt, they said to Moshe, "Why did you take us out? You should have left us there." The language of Ufaro hikriv, in the beginning of Pasuk Yud, verse 10, and Paro came close, can also be read, and Paro caused to get close.
He feel,
that's right. He caused to come close. So, based on this, the Medrash says that Paro convinced, he led the way. Like we said, before he even left Egypt, he had to convince his people to chase down the Jewish people. Here, once they got there, and now they thought they had the Jews cornered, still, Paro was leading the way, because the people would not have followed. They weren't ready to attack the Jewish people, because they were still licking their wounds from all of the plagues. And they knew that they're dealing with a very powerful force that is the God of the Jewish people. So they were still nervous about it. And Paro needed to lead the way and to push so that the people would follow him to the Jewish people. Then when it says that the Jews lifted their eyes and behold, Mitzrayim, Egypt, was chasing after them, here the Medrash tells us something fascinating. Even here, there was something supernatural going on. And that is that we've discussed this in various classes in the past, that each nation has an angel that represents that particular nation. Normally, of course, we don't see angels. We know that conceptually there is an angel that represents each of the nations, and that what happens to that particular angel is meant to be a harbinger for what happens to the nation. So, for example, when Yehoshua leads the Jewish people into Israel, and now he has to fight with all those nations that were in Israel to conquer Israel, Hashem takes the angels and puts them down before Yehoshua to show him that they are now under his control. And therefore, once the angels are under his control, then it's just a matter of going through the motions so that the nations are also subjugated under his control. Here, the Medrash says the Jews lifted up their eyes and they saw the angel of the Egyptians. When it says, "Vine Mitzrayim nosea achareyam," and behold, Egypt was chasing after them, it doesn't mean the people, although of course the people were, but they saw the actual angel that represents the nation of Egypt, that he was descending from the heavens to assist the Egyptian nation in attacking the Jewish people. So the Jewish people are seeing something that normally you can't see. It's not that they saw something that wasn't true. They did see something that was true, but normally you don't see this. Here they saw this angel descending from the heavens to help the Egyptians attack the Jewish people. Now, what that means is that the Jewish people, in order to have the confidence that they would be saved, needed to believe that not only was Hashem going to save them from their natural enemies, the Egyptians, but Hashem was going to save them from the supernatural as well, from this angel that was coming to help the Egyptians fight. It's not that Hashem can't do that. Of course, Hashem can do anything. But when they were there, trapped by this extremely powerful army, the most powerful army in the world, and they don't have the wherewithal to fight, and they have their backs to the sea, they can't run either, and now they need to maintain their faith. Hashem is going to take care of us. So when Hashem was setting up the Egyptians for the great fall that they're going to have, he also set up the Jewish people with a great test of whether we would maintain our belief in Hashem or not. In Pasuk Yud Beis, in verse 12, it says, "Isn't this the thing that we spoke to you about when we were still in Egypt, saying, 'Leave us alone and let us serve the Egyptians. For it is better for us to serve the Egyptians than our deaths, or than that we die in the Midbar, in the wilderness.'" When did they say this to Moshe? When did they say to Moshe, "Leave us alone and let us serve the Egyptians"? So Rashi tells us that at the end of Parshas Shemos, and that would be on page 316, the very end of Parshas Shemos, after Moshe and Aaron go before Paro for the first time, and they demand the release of the Jewish people, and Paro responds by
Making life harder.
Taking away the bricks. Taking away the straw, excuse me. So now they need to look for straw as well, which makes the work much more difficult. And the Shotrim, those Jews who were supposed to be overseeing the work, they get beaten by the Egyptians because the Jews can't meet their quotas. So when they come out from before Paro, having been beaten up, they meet Moshe and Aaron. The Pasuk says in Pasuk Chav, verse 20, "Vayifgu'u es Moshe ve'es Aaron nitzavim likrasam." They met Moshe and Aaron standing to greet them, b'tzeisam es Paro, when they left from Paro. "Vayomru aleihem," and they said to them, "Yere Hashem aleichem v'yishpot." Hashem should look upon you and judge. "Asher hiv'ashtem es reichenu," that you have made our very, I'm reading the English, very scent abhorrent.
Very what?
Our very scent.
Our smells.
What it says over here. Yeah. Be'enei Pharaoh, be'enei avadav, in the eyes of Pharaoh, in the eyes of his servants, v'asescher bi'adam l'hargenu, to put a sword in their hands to kill us. So Rashi says in Parashas Beshalach, which we just read, Rashi says that this is where they spoke to Moshe. When they're saying over here at the sea, didn't we tell you to leave us alone and let us serve the Egyptians, for it's better that we serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness? That's referring to right over here on page 316, where they say that Hashem should judge you for having made us despised by the Egyptians. Now they've taken away the straw. Now, it's noteworthy that on page 316, there's no mention of the words that it says where we are on page 370. They don't say on 316, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians. What they do is they say, Moshe and Aaron, look what you've done. You've made it worse. May God judge you for what you've done to us, because you've made things worse. Now, implicit in that, of course, is leave us alone. All you've done is made things worse. No one asked you for this. Leave us alone. That's implicit. But the words on 370 are more direct than that. It's let us serve the Egyptians, for it is better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. On page 316, there's no mention of the wilderness. They're not talking about the wilderness. They're talking about in Egypt itself. Mm-hmm. You've gone and made things worse. We were at least surviving. We were meeting the quotas. Good, we were slaves, but we were living. Now, you've made it that they're going to start beating us up because we're not fulfilling our quotas. But there's no mention of the wilderness. So, how is it that what is said on 316 is understood to be what they're saying on 370? That they're saying that, didn't we tell you to leave us alone? Because it's better that we serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness? So, who said this on page 316?
The overseers,
end up being recognized as great tzaddikim, for they were willing to be beaten up rather than beat the Jews who weren't fulfilling their quotas. Instead, they got beaten. And as a result, they merit to be the 70 zekanim and the 70 elders that assist Moshe Rabbeinu, and they also merit to be the 12 leaders of each of the tribes, the leaders, the Nesiim. The Medrash tells us that more specifically on page 316, the ones who said this to Moshe were Dasan and Aviram. Now, Dasan and Aviram, it appears, were Shotrim. See, Dasan and Aviram are an interesting study, which we're going to learn more about them as we move along in the Chumash, particularly in Parshas Korach, although they're going to come up here in Parshas Beshalach as well. Dasan and Aviram were already thorns in Moshe's side from the time of Egypt. We really encountered them before when Moshe came out and saw one of them beating the other one, raising his hand against the other one. We asked the question that when the 80% of the Jewish people died and were not redeemed from Egypt, why were Dasan and Aviram redeemed? And the answer is, it seems to me, because Dasan and Aviram are complex. It's true that there's a lot of negative, and we're more familiar with the negative, because in the end, they're going to meet a very bad end because of their sins. However, there seems to be parts of them that are actually positive. It seems that they were amongst those who would not beat their fellow Jews and instead were beaten.
That they would beat each other.
They would beat each other. It seems that they would do that. But they were beaten over here by the Egyptians.
Right.
And they come and they tell Moshe Rabbeinu, who asked you to get involved? We didn't ask you. Why'd you get us into this mess?
Right.
So Dasan and Aviram represent a faction of the Jewish people that on the one hand seems to have some, we'll call it good qualities. But at the same time, they are very skeptical about Moshe. They're not convinced that Moshe is following the best course of action. How can you question Moshe? Moshe is coming from Hashem. So if you are a God-fearing Jew, and there is someone who is representing Hashem, and you believe that they're not doing what is the best course of action, you only have two choices. You can either say that they are misrepresenting what Hashem says, meaning Hashem said X, but they're claiming Hashem said Y, so they're saying something different than what Hashem really said, or you have to say that Hashem doesn't know what He's doing. Now, if you're a God-fearing Jew, you can't say Hashem doesn't know what He's doing. So the only recourse you have, if you're going to question what the man of God is saying, is that he's misrepresenting God. He's not really saying what Hashem said. He's claiming to say what Hashem said, but it's not really what Hashem said. You have Moshe, who proved that he was sent by Hashem. He had the right code. He said, Pakod Pakadati, I have redeemed, which is the correct code words. And he performed all kinds of miracles. This is even before the 10 plagues. He performs all kinds of miracles with his staff and with throwing the water on the ground, with the blood and putting his hand in his shirt, all those things that we saw before. And yet, Dasan and Aviram, they say, Moshe, you obviously can't be representing Hashem properly because look what happened. You went before Paro and things got worse. So they are not convinced that Moshe is faithfully representing Hashem. Now they can't say that Moshe didn't have a revelation at all, because Moshe had the code. Moshe had the miracles. Clearly Moshe must represent Hashem in some way, but they feel that he's not being completely faithful to the word of Hashem. There are things that he's doing which are his own choices, not only from Hashem. This is what they believe firmly. Now, the next thing that happens is all the plagues. And there, you can't complain about Moshe throughout the 10 plagues. There, it's miracle after miracle after miracle. Egyptians are getting smacked. Jews are living fine. You can't complain about that. And even Dasan and Aviram are going to have to admit that it appears that Moshe is representing Hashem. But Dasan and Aviram still, in the back of their minds, they believe that Moshe is capable of misrepresenting Hashem as well. Even though frequently he does represent Hashem, but there are times when he will misrepresent Hashem, as is evidenced by the episode when the straw was taken away. So now that they left Egypt, everything is going great. They're out there. They're moving along. And now Moshe says to him, you know what God told me to do? He said, we're going to go back so we can trap the Egyptians. And Dasan and Aviram are thinking to themselves, what kind of a harebrained idea is this? What do you mean? Hashem told you that? Or are you making this up as you go along? So they can't say anything because everybody believes in Moshe. Moshe has the faith of the people. He's got a great reputation. Moshe's popularity poll is up there. I mean, he's 99%. He's gonna, you know, so there's no, they can't fight that. But once the danger comes and they're on the sea, their backs are to the sea, the Egyptians are there, this powerful force that can just decimate them easily. And I forgot one thing. Remember, there was the cloud the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire. I mean, all of that is obviously great. But now, look what's happening. The Egyptians are there, the sea is here. They turn around and say, Moshe, didn't we tell you? Now, what didn't we tell you? Didn't we tell you that you are not faithful to the word of Hashem? That you sometimes make things up on your own? That you sometimes say your own ideas and claim they're from Hashem? Here you go again. You're doing it all over again. Just like in Egypt. When we told you in Egypt that God should judge you for what you did to us, because you should never have gone before Paro and given him an ultimatum before even trying to negotiate with him. You got him angry and he slammed the door on your face and he took away the straw. Here you go again. Things were going great and you decided to try to make some big thing out of this and take us back to where we are now going to be in big trouble. Didn't we tell you that? What they're saying is, didn't we say the same type of thing to you that you are deciding on your own?
This the Dasan Aviram in both places?
Yeah, well, Dasan Aviram are leading the people. It's that faction that Dasan Aviram is able to convince. Right. Each time, there are some people who go along with Dasan and Aviram. Ultimately, when we get to Korach, Dasan and Aviram are going to be leading people against Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's going to destroy them. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, Dasan and Aviram are unwilling to accept the fact that Moshe is the servant of God. And we know that when Moshe dies, the eulogy, the hesped that Hashem gives for Moshe is Moshe Avdi. Moshe, my servant. In Yehoshua, the very beginning of Yehoshua, Hashem says to Yehoshua, to Joshua, Moshe Avdi Meis. Moshe, my servant, has died. No one else is Avdi, is my servant. Moshe is completely and totally my servant. Moshe does not do anything on his own. He does what I tell him to do. He acts completely and totally based on what I tell him. The very few times when Moshe didn't, we know about it. Moshe hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. We know about it. He lost the ability to go into Israel. Very few times where Moshe deviates from the word of Hashem, but the default is Moshe is the servant of God. He does everything the way Hashem tells him to do it. Dasan and Aviram, they from the beginning believe that Moshe is capable of misrepresenting Hashem as well. And they're claiming now that he's doing it all over again. Dasan and Aviram have no voice when things are going great. Mm-hmm. How do you can't fight that. You're not going to win an election against an incumbent when everything is going terrific. You can't defeat the incumbent because everything's going great. It's only if there's trouble that you have what to pounce on and say, oh, you see? Dasan and Aviram could only speak up now when things aren't going well. Now they're able to speak up because things look bad. Moshe, with his great humility, tolerates Dasan and Aviram over and over and over again. He's going to tolerate them here as well. He tolerated them back in Egypt. He didn't say back to Dasan and Aviram, you're wrong, you're fools. Instead, Moshe went back to Hashem and said, Hashem, why did you send me? Look what happened to the Jewish people. He didn't throw it back in Dasan and Aviram's face. Here as well, his response is not, Dasan and Aviram, you idiots, I only do what Hashem says. Or an indignant response, and who do you think you are? He doesn't respond like that, because Moshe is, after all, the Anav Mikol Adam. He's the most humble of all men. And Moshe instead responds very positively. And in Pasuk Yud Gimel 13, Moshe says, don't be afraid, stand and see the salvation of Hashem that He'll do for you today, for as you see the Egyptians today, you will not continue to see them forever. Moshe is willing to be Malamed Zchus. He's willing to look at the positive of Dasan Avim. He's willing to say, they're scared. I can't blame them. They're scared. In Egypt, Moshe's response to Dasan Avim was, I can't blame them. They just got beaten up. They're in pain. So Moshe goes back to Hashem and says, why did you send me? Look what happened to them. Why did you have me do that? Moshe is willing to think what the other person is going through rather than be indignant for his own ego. Here as well, instead of responding in an indignant manner, Moshe's response is, I understand what you're going through. You're scared. I get it. I understand. But stand. You'll see. It's going to work out. It's all going to be good. Hashem is going to take care of us. We're all ready for this. You're going to see an unbelievable miracle. You've never seen anything like this before in your life, or anybody else either, for that matter. And the way you see the Egyptians today, they will never be like this again in history. As we move through the Chumash and we come up with Dasan Aviram again, we're going to constantly recall this battle, this struggle.
So it sounds similar to what Korach thought.
Well, that's why they're going to be easily convinced to join Korach. That's right up their alley. This is what they believe the whole time. That Moshe acts on his own from time to time. And in that particular instance, they're going to claim that he decided to make Aaron into the Kohen Gadol rather than Hashem.
Throughout Jewish history, you're always going to find people who act this way. Mm-hmm. So that's what the Torah later on tells you, build fences for yourself and always ask the Torah to guide you that you shouldn't be a Dasan and Aviram,
yes,
as righteous as they were.
Yeah, but you have to temper that slightly. People act the way they act because they make choices. Dasan and Aviram made a choice. They chose to question Moshe. The way that you can ask the question is, why did Hashem allow them to have the access and to have the spotlight the way they have it? Hashem could have denied them the spotlight. He could have made them unable to get the following that they got. So that could be because of what you're saying, that Hashem wants us to learn how to deal with people like this.
Right.
Now the last pasuk before we move on is pasuk Yidal, verse 14. Hashem yilachem lachem. These are the last words of Moshe to them. Hashem is going to fight for you. Ve'atem tacharishun, and you shall be silent. So there's much said about these last two words, and the Hebrew words, v'atem tacharishun, and you shall be silent. What does it mean, and you shall be silent?
Don't complain.
Okay, so the simple simple meaning is, you will have no reason to complain. You'll be silent. All the complaining you're doing right now, Hashem is going to take them out, and you'll be fine. You'll have nothing to complain about.
Gosh.
But they don't learn the lesson, though.
Well, they are silenced for the time being. You know, that is certainly going to happen.
Maybe Hashem manifests himself, they'll be silent.
Okay.
Hashem will do it without your help.
Okay, so right. Some of them, some of the commentaries say that Hashem will do this on his own. He's not going to need your help at all. This is going to be something which comes completely from Hashem, which means that, I mean, when do we ever help Hashem? We can't. If he can do everything he wants on his own, he doesn't need our help to do anything. However, we know that we daven. And when we daven, that does trigger things upstairs. That does make things happen. Hashem responds to prayer. Here, Moshe, some of the Mefarshim understand this to mean that Moshe is telling them, you won't even need to pray. This is going to be Hashem. This is Hashem's show. He's not doing this for you. He's doing this because he wants his name sanctified. That's why he's doing this. Now, it's true that his name is going to be sanctified through you, because that's the paradigm Hashem is setting up, that the Jewish people represent Hashem, and Hashem is inextricably tied to the Jewish people. So it's true that it is through you Jews, through your salvation, that Hashem's name is going to be sanctified. That is true. And it is through the destruction of your enemies that his name is going to be sanctified. But this is his show. The goal here is not you. If the goal were you, he would never have had you circle back. He would have just had you go on to Israel, go on to Har Sinai. Why come back and get trapped at the Red Sea? You're free already. What does he have to do that for? This is not about you. This is about Hashem. That Hashem's name should be sanctified in the world. One of the commentaries adds to this point to say as follows. The Egyptians had just endured the 10 plagues, and yet they're still coming after the Jewish people. If they're still coming after the Jewish people, then they can't possibly believe that Hashem is somehow going to give up on the Jews. If he got them this far, obviously Hashem is still with the Jewish people. The only thing the Egyptians could possibly believe is that, yes, Hashem is powerful, but we can still defeat him. Our belief, our deities are more powerful, or in some instances are more powerful than the Jewish God. They when the Jews circle back and appear to get lost, it's not that the Egyptians believe, well, God has given up on them. He took them out of Egypt, but then he decided, forget it, I'll leave them be. They don't believe that. They believe that the Jewish God got lost. He had a bad GPS. So they believe there's a weakness that we can exploit. So they're coming after the Jewish God. They're out to get the Jewish God. They know they're not, I don't mean to kill the Jewish God. It means to show him up. To show that after all he did to us, we can get him back. And we're going to get his people, and that's going to show that we can get that God back. We can show that we have power too. So Hashem is saying to the Jewish people through Moshe, this isn't about you. This is between the Egyptians and me. It's me they're after. They're trying to show me up. They're doing it through you because you're my people. But they're trying to show me up. And I'm not going to let them. I'm not going to let them do it. They're going to try to show me up, and I'm going to wipe them out for that reason. The Medrash tells us, and we're going to see in Uz Yashir when we get there, a reference to this, that anti-Jewish, which we call today anti-Semite, Semites are not only Jews, but today that means anti-Jews. Anti-Jewish, anti-Semite is synonymous with anti-God. We represent Hashem. Those who have a hatred for Jews It's because they have a hatred for God. We are tied to Him. And a hatred for us is really a hatred for Hashem. And the Egyptians are showing that here, and Hashem is saying to them, Moshe is telling them in the name of Hashem, this isn't about you. You'll be silent. Hashem is going to take care of this whole problem, because this is Hashem is going to show the world that His name is sanctified, that He is in control of the entire world, and the Egyptians have no power at all. Pasuk Tezvah, verse 15. Vayomer Hashem Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Matitz akelai. What are you calling out to me for? What are you crying out to me for? Daber b'nei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, v'yiso, and travel. Now, we have no record of Moshe having cried out to Hashem. Moshe spoke to the people. So the Medrash says that Moshe then turned around and started to daven. He started to daven to Hashem, save the Jewish people. Hashem responds to Moshe, he says, what are you crying out for? There's nothing, there's no issue over here. Just talk to the Jewish people and tell them to travel. Go.
In which direction?
Through the water. Just go into the water. Now again, he didn't yet tell him what's going to happen. He just says, I don't see what the problem is. Just go. Just travel. The Egyptians are over there. Go that way. Now, finally Hashem tells him what's going to happen. Ve'ata en yu haremes matecha, lift your staff. Unateis gadcha layam, and stretch your hand out over the ocean. Uvka'ehu, and split it. And the Jews will come into the ocean on dry land. So now we know what's going to happen. It says, just put your hand over the ocean with your staff and split it. Of course, it sounds so funny, right? You know, you're saying to Moshe, put your hand over the ocean and split it. Are there any instructions on how to do that? Right? So clearly Hashem is going to split it, but it's the way he's telling it to Moshe is, and you split it. He doesn't say, put your hand over the ocean and I will split it. Just put your hand over the ocean and split it. God. That is, of course, a remez. That's a hint to the fact that there had to be some effort on the part of the Jewish people to make it split. Most of us are familiar with the Medrash of Nachshon ben Aminadav jumping into the water. We'll get to it soon. But here you see a reference to it. It's not just, go ahead and I'll split it. Put your hand over and I'll split it. You split it. You make it happen. Because you're going to have to put in some effort. Va'ani anai. Hinani mechazek es leiv Mitzrayim. I'm going to strengthen the heart of the Egyptians. V'yavo achareim. They will come after them, after the Jewish people. V'kavda b'faro v'cholchelo. I will be sanctified with Paro and with all of his army. B'richbo, with his chariots. U'befarashav, and with his horsemen. V'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. And Egypt will know that I am God. B'kavdi b'faro, when I am sanctified or glorified. Through Paro, Birichbo, through his chariots, Uvevarashav, and through his horsemen.
That's repeating itself.
Yeah. You should do it, and I'm going to strengthen them, and I will become sanctified, I'll become glorified, and the Egyptians will know that I am Hashem when I become glorified. Seems like it's two parts. It's I am inherently going to become glorified, meaning the whole world will know who I am, and the Egyptians particularly will know who I am. There is a, if you want to call it a vendetta, there is a, the Egyptians are being singled out over here, that Hashem wants the Egyptians at the end of the day to admit it. Hashem, hu ho Elokim. Hashem is God and no other. And he's going to make it crystal clear.
Because they harmed the Jews too much.
They've harmed the Jews, and they're the ones who are trying to show that he's not God, that he's not in control. And he wants to show that they're wrong.
That's like an answer to what Paro said.
Mi Hashem.
That's right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Right. This is right. That's the response. Paro, all the way in the beginning, he said, who's this Hashem? I never heard of him.
Yeah.
Right? And now he's going to know who Hashem is.
Right.
Pasuk Yates, verse 19. Vayisa malacho Elokim, haholech lifnei machane Yisrael, and the angel of God that was going in front of the camp of the Jewish people traveled. It moved, and he went behind them. So there was an angel that had been leading the Jewish people, and now he went behind the Jewish people to where in the side the Egyptians were. The front of the Jewish people was where the ocean was. The back of the Jewish people was where the Egyptians were. The angel that had been leading them now went behind them. Vayisa amud ha'anam mipneihem, and the pillar of cloud traveled from before them, vayamod me'achareihem, and stood behind them. Now, we had not been told about an angel leading the Jewish people. We had been told about a pillar of cloud. We had been told about a pillar of fire. Now we are told that this pillar of cloud and pillar of fire was being controlled by an angel. Hashem had designated a particular angel to manifest that cloud, to have that cloud in front of the Jewish people, which then became a pillar of fire. The angel got up and went to the other side, so the cloud followed suit. That cloud was tied to that angel. So here as well, you see now in retrospect what was going on. The Jews had followed this cloud, and now they're hitting the sea. They're facing the sea. And the Egyptians come up behind them. Dathan and Aviram and company, when they were claiming that Moshe was making his own decisions, so what about that pillar of cloud? What do you mean he made his own decisions? They're just following the pillar of cloud. The cloud goes that way, they go that way. It goes that way, they go that way. And now it went to the sea. They went to the sea. So, how can you blame Moshe? So, Dathan and Aviram understood that there's a cloud over here, and that's supernatural. They didn't doubt that. I mean, you couldn't doubt it. It's right in front of your eyes. But the cloud did something silly. The cloud did something unexplainable. It went the wrong way. It should have gone that way, and instead it went back and ended up getting them trapped in front of the ocean. They blame that on Moshe. They say, Moshe, you did this to us. Somehow, yes, you're representing Hashem, which is why there's a pillar of cloud, but also you're making decisions that are affecting where that cloud goes. So I'm just showing you that on a certain level, what Dathan and Aviram and company are claiming is illogical. If you believe that Hashem is running the show, then you can't blame Moshe. If you believe that Moshe is running the show, why is there still a cloud over here that they're following and it takes them to the ocean? So they're willing to straddle the fence. They're willing to split hairs and say, yes, there's a cloud. Yes, that's supernatural. Yes, that comes from Hashem. But Moshe, you're still doing something over here. You're pulling the string somehow. You're getting in the way.
What was their motivation? I mean, we don't ever take them seriously as being rivals for leadership of people.
I think that it devolved into a personal battle. I think that at first in Egypt, they felt that Moshe was doing the wrong thing. Moshe was leading the people in a way that was destructive. That the way that they felt you deal with the Egyptians is in a politically expedient manner. You don't make ultimatums to your taskmasters who have your lives in their hands. That's not a smart move. You work the system, you work your way up. Here we are already at the position of overseers. Perhaps we can even get closer to Paro, we can start whispering in his ear. That was their method. And when Moshe came and starts, you know, like as if he's a bull in a china shop, and he's like he's making ultimatums. Now so what are you doing? You're ruining everything. I believe that's how it started. But as time goes on, I think that it does devolve into just a power struggle. It's just this thing. They can't accept that Moshe really is the man of God. That he really is everything that he appears to be. And so they're trying to undermine him at every step. Here it's not yet. And we're going to see we're going to see where they're going to try to undermine Moshe regularly.
So their first encounter with Moshe Rabbeinu was when he interrupted their fighting.
Yes.
It wasn't just with the taskmasters.
Mm-hmm.
So that, again, was an interference.
Yes.
With Moshe.
Yes.
Well, actually, they saw him the day before.
Right.
He killed. That was the
when he
first
killed the Egyptian.
Egyptian.
First, right.
That's
yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. Right. They did not think that that's how you handle Egyptians. Yeah. That's not the way to do it. Yeah.
I think the Torah is mentioning the angel because when they were taken out of the shrine, we read in the Haggadah, Anivala Malach, the Hashem himself, and here he's saying his Malachim to do the work for him. You know, he glorified himself in Mitzrayim, and now he has the angels.
Okay, it's true that there is an angel over here, but it's not going to be the angel that's going to do the actual destruction of the Egyptians. This is just the pillar of cloud.
Okay.
So the angel moves to the back, and that's where the cloud follows. And Pasuk Chaf, Vayavo bein machane Mitzrayim uvein machane Yisrael, and it came the cloud came between the camp of the Egyptians, thank you, and between the camp of the Jews. And there was the cloud and darkness. Now, it doesn't, there's a little fine print over here. There was cloud and darkness for the Egyptians. Vayar es halayla, and it lit up the night. So it doesn't make any sense. Was it cloud and darkness, or was the night lit up? What does that mean?
Thunderstorm.
So, okay, well, it's sort of like that.
Yeah.
The way that the Medrash explains it, and Rashi says it over here as well, is that what happened every night, as we've already learned, is that the cloud was there leading the way, and then at nighttime, the cloud started to disappear into the ground, and as it went down, it was replaced by a pillar of fire, which lit up the night.
Right.
And remember, they were able to travel even at night. Here, the pillar of fire appears at night, but rather than replacing the cloud, it ends up coming down and being side by side with the cloud, back to back with the cloud. So the cloud faces the Egyptians, and the fire faces the Jews. So they're back to back with each other. The Egyptians can only see cloud. The Jews can only see fire. And now it's going to split the camps in half. The Egyptians are on one side, the Jews on the other. For the Egyptians, it's pitch black. They've got, not only is it nighttime, but it's nighttime and they're in a fog. They're in a heavy, heavy fog. There's this cloud that's blocking out all light. So it's pitch black. And they don't have any flashlights. I mean, it's dark. On the Jews' side, it's bright. There's this pillar of fire like they've had every night since they've started leaving Egypt, and it's a bright light. Let me just finish the pasuk. Velo karav ze el ze kol halayla, and they did not get near each other the entire night. The Egyptian camp and the Jewish camp are now clearly separated and defined, and neither one can get near the other one. The Egyptians cannot get near the Jewish people. They can't bother. They can't molest the Jewish people. The Jewish people are protected behind these two pillars. Yes.
I think it's interesting that it's Ha-Hoshech, and it's often pointed out that when a definite article is there, it refers to a specific darkness, and the only darkness we've encountered is the darkness that happened as a plague.
Interesting.
It was this immobilizing, incredibly dense, paralyzing
darkness,
not just night.
Very interesting.
You know?
Yeah, it could very well be that it was something like that it was just this inky blackness. It wasn't just...
There's no other reason to call it the darkness.
Right, right. Very nice. Very good.
Didn't the splitting occur at the dawn?
Yes.
It's nighttime or it's not?
Now it's nighttime. It's not going to split yet. It's not going to split yet. They're ready to travel into the water, but it's not ready to split yet. It hasn't split yet. Moshe's going to stretch out his arm, but nothing's going to happen yet. Not yet. And it's going to go through the night before the splitting of the sea. Well, we'll see. The sea splits during the nighttime. It then they drown right in the morning. But we'll see the timing as we move along. Now, there is a very important medrash that is mentioned by Rashi in the Gemara, and the medrash explains that the pasuk Yotes verse 19 of Vayisa Malach Elokim. I want to make sure I got the right verse. Almost positive it's at first. I have to look this up to be sure. We're at the end of the class. Blinator, I'm going to look this up. I'm pretty sure it's Pasuk Yotes, verse 19, is actually a Pasuk that represents the name of God Himself. God has several names. Now, we know that the most significant name of God that we have is Yud Ke Vav Ke. It's spelled Yud and then a Hey and then a Vav and then a Hey. That's the most significant name that we know of. We don't pronounce it that way. The Torah says not to pronounce it that way. We talked about this when at the burning bush when Hashem talked to Moshe about his names. But there are other names of Hashem that are longer than that, that we don't have anymore. We don't know how to pronounce them. We don't have them. And this pasuk, this verse, hints to that name. It hints to the name of Hashem. So, Blinetter, next time, I'm going to... I just have to look up that Rashi to make sure I got the right one over here. So, next time, we're going to begin with a discussion about that name of Hashem. The point is that this event is so significant that that embedded in this event is this super powerful name of Hashem that we don't even know what it is because of the significance of this event. So we'll begin Mitzvah Hashem next time with that discussion.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.